So for this evening, I've chosen a title rather than follow other people's suggestions on the Friday night talk subject. So I wanted to talk about what we call spiritual pride, which is something which is, I found, very unpleasant in my role as a Buddhist monk, as a person of, you might call, religion, and meeting people of other Buddhist sects and groups and other religions as well. Even inside our own little part of Buddhism, to see sometimes people thinking they're better than others. And it's something which has no part, you know, in the spiritual journey and no part in even life. And it blocks this beautiful compassion which should really be at the heart of our paths. And it stops the happiness and the friendliness which we can generate between each other. So this evening I wanted to talk more about what we call spiritual pride. And of course I have many anecdotes about this, and the earliest anecdote comes from when I first came to Perth over 30 years ago now. And I was with another monk at the time, and he told me he was invited to an interfaith gathering. And he couldn't believe what he heard, and this is pretty accurate what he reported. That at the gathering there was a Jewish rabbi, a Muslim priest, a Anglican priest, and the Buddhist. And the Muslim priest, he had the nerve, the gall, to actually to say, looking at the Jewish priest, he said, "You are primary school." Then he looked at the Anglican and said, "You're secondary school, and we are university." Poor old Buddhist, we even hadn't gone to school yet. And that someone could be so conceited as to say something like that was just gobsmacking. And it's not only, you know, between religions. You know, sometimes, you know, in Buddhism, sometimes people call themselves, "We are the best path. We are the fast path. We are the compassionate path. We are the superior path." And know there's something very wrong with that. And I'm surprised that some people don't recognize that. It is this idea of "I am better than you," or "My God in heaven is bigger than your God in heaven." It all smacks of like a pride, conceit, and it's totally against, you know, the Buddhist path. Not only that, but you know, sometimes people think, you know, if they really get into a path like Buddhism, that, okay, let's all get enlightened and see who's more enlightened than other people. And sometimes they start to compare one another. "And you've been coming here for 3 or 4 years or 8 or 10 years. How enlightened are you? I'm more enlightened than you are. Na, 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 na." And you might think that's childish, but actually you find that, you see that actually happening sometimes. There's a lot of comparing and judging, which, you know, is, again, nothing to do with the spiritual path. Yes, there are, you know, attainments, you know, in something like Buddhism, in the sense of becoming more compassionate, more peaceful, more wise, more still. You know, you can actually feel that as you meditate more and more. You can feel that maybe as you become wiser and wiser, you do become more peaceful, more happy. You know, your life tends to go along more peacefully. There's so many things which happen when you come to places like this. And again, I still remember a story a long time ago where a man, he was a Sri Lankan, and he was working one of the government departments here in Perth, and he was what we call a Waisak Buddhist. Waisak is the holy day of the year in May, celebrating the Buddha's enlightenment, birth, and final passing away, all on the same full moon day in May. So this was a Sri Lankan, a nominal Buddhist, who would come every Waisak, but never come any other time of the year. Until he told me that he had a boss at work who was one of the boss from hell characters. And you all know what I mean by a boss from hell. You may have one, or even worse, you are one. Be careful. And anyway, he had this boss from hell. You know, I was always angry at him, asking him to do things which were just totally beyond anyone's capacity. And when he tried to do extra work, never getting any praise, never getting any sort of gratitude, and being criticized for the slightest of faults, even though he really went out of his way to do that extra work for this boss. But, he said, in a space of 3 months, his boss totally changed. The same man became far more kind and sensitive and started to show appreciation to this hard worker. And it was such a great change that this Sri Lankan man, he asked his boss, he said, look, I don't want to offend you, but you were a very difficult boss 3 months ago, but now you've become so sensitive and kind and wise and stuff. You know, what's happened to you? And his boss said, you know, an Australian guy, he said, I've found this wonderful temple in Nolamara, and I've been learning some meditation and listening to the talks. And this Sri Lankan man said, that's my temple! But he never went here. I like saying that, and then he started coming. I like to say that because, you know, he actually saw there was actually something changed. There is something which happens to people who come here a long time, even a short time. There is something called attainments, but we don't make those attainments a source of pride. You know, we don't have the people in the front, you're all the enlightened ones. The ones in towards the back, you know, you're the scallywags, the hopeless cases. You don't actually advance closer to the monks the more you've been coming here. No, we don't do things like that. Because one of the things my teacher once said is some of these one words or one sentence sayings are sometimes the best. In all the talks which I give, sometimes there's a few little sayings which you can take back with you, which actually mean more than an hour or many, many other talks you've heard. And he used to tell us as monks, he said, you're meditating not to get something. You're meditating to let go of things. Not to get some more attainments, but to empty out of all these attainments which you sometimes thought you had. We meditate, we're practicing to let go, to free ourselves. Not to burden ourselves with more things. Especially with more spiritual attainments. Now once you understand that, what a beautiful little expression that was of how, what the spiritual path, especially Buddhism, should be. The more we practice, the more we understand, the more we don't compare ourselves with other people, the more we don't need to be better than anybody else. Have you ever noticed just how that ruins your whole life? Trying to live up to other people's expectations and trying to be good, trying to be better, trying to be the best. For me, we'd go the opposite direction as a monk. We don't try and be the best. I try to be the worst. I don't try and tell the best jokes. I try the worst jokes. And here it comes. Today's worst joke. Someone sent me this, and he was saying that, you know, there was in the Northern Territories on a particular road, they found 200 dead crows on the road. And they were so concerned that it may be avian flu, they sent off these veterinary scientists, you know, from Canberra to try and check out whether this was an outbreak of this terrible disease. But what they found was there's nothing to do with avian flu. They say 98% of those 200 birds were killed by trucks and 2% by cars. And that got the CSIRO thinking that, you know, why is it that only a small number were killed by cars and a majority by trucks? So they got another expert to do a whole year's research at great expense, and they found out the reason why. Because they found when a crow eats the roadkill on the road, there's always another crow on the tree as a lookout. And the lookout crow can always warn the bird about cars by saying, car, car, but can't say truck. It's So I don't ever try and tell the best jokes. They always go down, down, down every week. So that was thanks to Eric Williams for telling me that joke. But when we don't have spiritual pride, you know, when we're not trying to live up to some people's expectations, can you understand how free you feel? And unfortunately, that many people in the world, you know, I see them so often, you know, when you're very young, you have to try and do well at school. And only sort of 50% of people, only 50% of children can be above average intelligence. Okay, only 50% can be above average intelligence. That's what average means. But we always want our kids to be above the average intelligence. They can't. Half of your kids are going to be below average intelligence. Half of you are going to be above. That's the nature of truth. But trouble is, we keep pushing our kids to always do better. And you know, you're a girl, you have to be like a supermodel on the front cover of magazines. And as people have told me many times, now this was this one guy, he went to a meditation retreat with the supermodel Kate Moss. Now, she's a really top supermodel, Kate Moss. And when he was told that Kate Moss was there, he started looking around. Which one is she? Which one is she? He couldn't find her. Because the real Kate Moss, the real girl, just looks like everybody else. It's when they put on the makeup and do the hair and the airbrushing and the lights. That's just what makes a supermodel. They're not real. And I've done that as well. I've been to, not to a big supermodel. No, I'm a supermodel, yes. I've been on two retreats where there's been, one was a film star, a Thai film star. And I knew there was a film star at my retreat because of all the Thai boys who came to the retreat for the first time. I've never seen them since, just because of the film star. And there's another supermodel in the retreat I gave in Kuala Lumpur some time ago. And they said it was a supermodel there. And it was on, everybody in Malaysia knew her. I couldn't recognize her. And I looked for her. And she looked like everybody else. You see, but you're trying to live up to something which you can't be. And unless you're up to that standard, you're not good enough. Have you ever seen this idea of pride, of trying to attain and trying to be the best, how it kills people? It's so cruel, pride. So at least in a religion, we can actually let that all go. You can come in here and wear whatever you like. You don't have to wear makeup. You can be sloppy. You can actually let your hair go. And you can be you at last and be respected without trying to live up to anything. Imagine how free that is when you can come to a place and just be who you are, rather than having to live up to some attainments in life. There's another story which someone told me this, and I wrote it in my new book. There was a party, like a reception, you know, for doctors. And this guy goes into the reception, and he talks to this man and said, "No, who are you?" And he said, "No, I'm the host of the reception. I'm a GP. And I've been working for about 20 years, you know, in Perth." And the guy says, "A GP, you know, that's nothing. I'm a brain surgeon." "GP, what's a GP?" Then he goes to his wife, "No, who are you? What do you do?" He said, "I'm a doctor too, but I work for Medicine Sans Frontières. I've just come back from Africa, from Somalia. Really dangerous place, you know, looking after some of the victims of, you know, the terrible insurgencies which happen in those countries. It's very dangerous, but someone has to do it." And this visitor said, "Yeah, that's very nice, but that's hardly brain surgery, is it?" He was that proud. And then they said, "This is our son. You know, he's not a doctor. You know, he works for NASA." And his son said, "Oh, you're a brain surgeon, are you? That's hardly rocket science, is it?" So eventually, all that pride business, it just really sucks, isn't it? Who cares whether you know, everybody is needed, whether it's a GP, whether it's a person who drives a bus, whatever. Everybody is needed and everybody is recognized. That's why that we try to take off all the idea of attainments know, in this spiritual path. And instead of actually attaining things and being proud of how much you've attained and how clever you are, how great a meditator you are. You know, sometimes people said, can't we have a meditation Olympics sometimes? Which means that we can sit there and see who can sit still the longest. And we can have that, you know, in the next Olympic Games in Rio, the meditation games. And the person who's last left standing when they are sitting meditation wins the gold medal. Would that be a good idea? Absolutely crazy. We don't do such things. And my teacher, who was always trying to stop such stupidity, and people who thought that if you meditate a long time, you are better than everybody else, he stopped that by calling people who meditate for many, many hours without moving. He called them that. He called that type of meditation chicken meditation, because he explained that chickens can sit on their eggs for 6 or 7 hours at a time. So if sitting for long periods of time meant you were a much better meditator, then all the chickens will become enlightened a long time ago. So it doesn't matter just how long you sit. It's not like seeing if you can beat the record and beat other people. That's not the point. That is comparing yourself with others. It's called like spiritual pride. How wise am I? And a lot of times that people actually, they do compare just what they call their wisdom. You can have arguments over the coffee table on Buddhism. You're wrong! That's not what the Buddha said. No, you're wrong! Isn't there something wrong with that? Of course there is. It's because the whole purpose of this is not using these teachings and wisdom to actually to raise your sense of self. This is why in Buddhism we have this teaching of no self. Not actually trying to make yourself smarter or wiser than others. For example, imagine you go to a school. In a school, you ask a question of a grade 1 kid, a grade 3 kid, a grade 7 kid. Who's going to know the answer more deeply or be more smart? Of course, a grade 7 kid is going to know more than a grade 1 kid because they've been there longer. Does that make them better or superior? Of course it doesn't make them superior, they just had more chance to learn. So we never ever think of anyone as being more superior than the others. Even keeping things like precepts. You know, just because you keep 5 precepts, or this is why I sometimes say, who is the highest? You know, is it monks or nuns the highest? Now in Buddhism you know that people who keep 5 precepts, you know, they're usually very highly respected. Now, to become a full member of our Buddhist society, you have to keep 5 precepts. If you don't know what those are, I can tell you afterwards. Usually that the next stage up is the 8 precepts, and those are people who don't eat in the afternoon. That's why when we have any food offerings here, I usually invite the 8 preceptors to come in first of all, to actually to take their food. And after the 8 preceptors, then I ask the 5 preceptors to take their food next. And after the 5 preceptors, I ask the 4 preceptors, the 3 preceptors, the 2 preceptors, then the 1 preceptors, and the no preceptors, I say, get out of here, you don't belong. No, I'm only joking. But, you know, sometimes people think, oh, the more precepts you take, the higher and more superior you are. So you ask, how many precepts do you take? 5. Ah, that's nothing. I keep 8 precepts. 8 precepts. Ah, that's nothing. I keep 10 precepts. I'm a novice monk. 10 precepts. That's nothing. I keep 227 precepts. I'm a monk. That's nothing, say the nuns. We keep 311 precepts. So who's superior? The monks or the nuns? Work it out for yourself. But we don't have that superiority business. Because again, there's something very wrong. There's something very disrespectful. Just because you keep more precepts than other people, does that make you better? Or is it that you're just starting? You know, one of the people I respected the most when I was in Thailand was this drunkard. This drunkard, he was trying his very best, but he had a very strong addiction to alcohol. But when it came to our retreat period, this 3 months range retreat, which we do every year in Buddhism, that's why the monks and nuns disappeared from here for 3 months. And we have our retreat, which I was teaching in Bodhinyana, and the nuns teach it at Dhammasara. This man tried to do something better just for the 3 months. So he vowed he would not touch any alcohol from dawn till sunset. And for him, that was such a difficult thing to do. And he said that, you know, he'd always make sure we got up very early, before dawn, to fill up. And at sunset, he was waiting with his bottle. Come on, son, get down, get down, get down. And then he'd start drinking again. But he did that for 3 months. Now, you may think that that is still indulging, but for him, it was such a difficult thing to do. And he managed that for 3 months. And you think, well done. For him, it was very tough. So I thought, yeah, your effort was wonderful. We praise the person like that. And so it doesn't matter what you're doing. It's something else which is really praiseworthy. You're trying, you're developing, you're growing. That's the best thing which we can recommend. So we don't actually say just because, you know, that you are, you can sit for hours, or because you're so wise, or because you can give a long talk, or because you're famous, or you're any better than anybody else. We don't have that at all. And even when you go into these deep states of meditation, for those of you who want to check me out, there's so many teachings of the Buddha, you know, where one of them was the Sapurisa Sutta, which detailed this progress of this incredible person who was getting more and more deep in meditation. And he said, just, you know, even after the first, this jhana, this great ecstasy state, he said he never thought of himself as anything better than any other person just because, you know, he was getting into these deep meditations. He never made that a source of pride and ego, because you understand this is letting go of pride, letting go of ego. He never compared himself to other people, which is why that when you see the monks and the nuns up here, as I hope with the lay people, you don't know who has got the great meditation or even who is enlightened, because we don't express this. It's a sense of look at me and how good I am. In fact, I've often said, if you ever want to find out who's not enlightened, ask them. And if they say, I'm enlightened, that's an absolute 100% certainty they're not. If they go around sort of saying how great they are, 100%, you know, that they've lost the path. It's not about ego expressing who you are. It's about just losing that sense of who you are. And in one of the great stories of this little novice, because in those days in India sometimes, and also in Thailand, sometimes you get these little people ordaining as monks, you know, these little novices. Now, don't ever think this is child exploitation, because many of the people who became novices in Asia, that was like a social safety net for boys who, you know, maybe their parents had too many children and they just could not look after them, or their parents died or whatever, and they just get this wonderful education and kindness in a monastery. And there was this one novice in the time of the Buddha called Sumana. He was only a small little novice, and some of the senior monks started teasing him. And when the Buddha saw that, he said, be careful, because even though he's only a small fellow, you don't know actually who he is. And he was one of these young people who got enlightened at a very young age with all psychic powers. It's amazing what he could do. And that's when the Buddha actually taught this great thing about the four small things you should always be careful of. Just because they're small, you can't even judge them. We all know small fires. A tiny fire in the forest and the bush of Australia can turn into a huge bushfire. So be careful of tiny fires. Be careful of tiny snakes. This is the season for snakes now. So even a tiny one can be very venomous and can almost kill you. And also be careful of, like they said, tiny princes. I suppose now you say, like, tiny rich kids, because their parents can be very powerful and they may get you into big trouble. And lastly, be careful of small monks or nuns, or even small meditators, lay people. You don't know what they can do. Just because you think that they're just nobody, you don't know what they are. We judge far, far too quickly. Brings me to one of the stories when I was first here. See this monk sitting next to me? He's so quiet. It's always the case. You don't know what he can do. Be careful. When I first came to Perth again, I was a second monk. I would sit quietly like that. And the senior monk was Ajahn Chakro, and he would give all the talks, great talks. He'd answer all the questions, and I would just sit there quietly. And it was only after 7 or 8 months that my senior, Ajahn Chakro, went to visit Thailand to have a break. So I had to give the talk. And after my first talk, this girl came up to me about 13 years of age, and she said, "That's amazing. That's wonderful. You can speak. I thought you were brain damaged." So he can speak, he's not brain damaged, so be careful. So sometimes we judge far too much. And if you want to find out if a person's enlightened or not, this is how the Buddha said, you know, a people actually claim enlightenment in the time of the Buddha. This is one of the little teachings from the old books. So this monk came up to the Buddha and said, "Someone who is enlightened never thinks they are better or worse or the same as other people. They never think they're better nor the same nor worse than other people." And the Buddha said, "Yes, correct." And he turned around to his attendant and said, "That was an enlightened person." That's how enlightened people express what enlightenment is. Never thinking you're better, nor worse, nor the same, not judging. Now we always think pride is I am better than other people. But pride is also I am worse than other people. Now unfortunately, here in a country like Australia, that second type of pride, I am worse than others, is so endemic. That too is pride, it's conceit. You aren't worse than other people. You're not better than other people, nor are you the same. You are just you, totally unique. There's not another person like you, thank goodness. But you're not better, you're not worse, you're not the same. Now you can understand just the opposite of this spiritual pride business. And imagine when you realize, I am not bad, I am not worse, there's nothing wrong with me. Then you find out you don't have to go to therapy or psychologists anymore. You are okay. You know what I said last week about the trees in the forest? Every tree is damaged. So don't think yourself worse because you're damaged. No. You are beautiful because you're damaged, because everyone else is damaged too. You belong to the forest. Sometimes you admit you're damaged. Other people, they hide it. We've all got our scars, which is what makes us who we are. But isn't it wonderful when you realize you're not worse than others? I'm saying that because it seems so obvious, but it's so true. And once you get that into your head, and get go of the conceit, you don't have to prove yourself so much. You know, aggressive people, people who are bullies in the office, people who are even violent, they all have this lack of self-worth. They think that they are worse than other people, so that's how they try and prove themselves. You don't need to do that when you let go of this conceit and this spiritual pride. You are just who you are. You don't need to make yourself look better than others. And if you can do that, you can let go of this terrible negativity which comes, I think I'm worse, and creates all these other problems from this. And nor do you think, obviously, the better stuff, nor do you think that you are the same as other people. You know, for every person in this room, you're a totally unique individual, your own path. And the path of enlightenment is not trying to prove you're better, you're worse, or the same. It's just to allow yourself to be, to let go of all that trying to attain, which is all trying to change things. We're trying to be here, not to get somewhere, but to be where we already are. Not to try and change things, but to love things as they are. To open the door of your heart to this moment as it is. Not to try and be better, but to try and accept yourself and respect yourself as you are. It's a letting go of this terrible thing of attainment, which always thinks you have to go and get something else to prove yourself. Go and get another degree. Go and score another goal. Go and improve your personal best. Try and make yourself better. All that sort of stuff, which is the stuff of stress. Spiritual teachers say you're good enough. Actually, you're more than good enough. You're actually incredibly beautiful. Sometimes people find that hard to believe. You look at yourself in the mirror and you see all your faults. You see your spots. You see your grey hair instead of this beautiful wisdom and good heart inside of you. It's amazing just how many people, they're looking for the faults. And of course, you can always find them. How about looking for the beauty? And you can find that too. Which means, you never find judge yourself as worse. Of course, I spend a lot of time teaching such things in prisons. I like prisons because there are some of the most damaged people, who've done terrible crimes. And let them not judge themselves. They've been judged by others. That's one of the problems why people keep going back to jail. They're judged, they think they're terrible people. And they think they're criminals, they think they're murderers, they think they're thieves, they think they're felons. And if they think they're that, they become that. It's very simple. If you don't judge yourself and allow yourself to be free, it means you don't have to recommit the crime. You're not a criminal anymore. You're not a dummy. There's many monks I've met. It's really strange that some of the monks, down at Bodhinyana Monastery, are very smart monks, incredibly clever, but they never finished even high school. Why? It's because sometimes in their career, there's one monk I'm thinking of. One of these monks, he told me that one day his grandfather took him aside and said, "You're stupid, you're dumb," because he wasn't doing as well as his brother. And he took that on board as a young boy, maybe 7 or 8 years of age. It got into him so much. He believed one of the people he respected and loved, his grandfather, he really thought he was dumb. And he lived up to that. He never finished school. But he was such an incredibly smart man. And it took me a while to see just how, somebody else judges us. We believe it. And we think we're not good enough. And we live up to that. And it's wonderful when you can say, no, you can do whatever you want. Be whoever you want. You don't have to sort of be fixed with all these judgments of what somebody told you to be. Some of my stories, again, of being a school teacher, I wanted to prove these things for myself, so they weren't just theories. And I remember just when I was a school teacher, one of the classes which I was teaching was in maths. There was a kid, I was told that this kid was hopeless at maths. He came bottom of the class the year before. And I decided, is a person come bottom of the class because they're hopeless at maths? Or is it another reason? Is it because they believe they're not good at maths? So I singled out this boy. I was teaching this class 2 or 3 times a week. I singled out this boy and I went to his desk, many times during the class. "Do you understand this? Is this good?" "Well done, you've got it." Praising him, helping him a little bit more, to try and encourage him that yes, he could do it. And it worked far better than I ever expected, because this is no exaggeration. That year, that kid came top in maths. He came from the very bottom to the very top, and it was simply because I was just encouraging him to believe that he can do this. You see how we judge ourselves? We think, I can't do this, I'm hopeless, I'm useless. That is the problem. That is actually the pride which people have. So we never think we're worse, we never think we're the same, we never think we're better. Those are the conceits which here in spirituality we try and overcome. So which is the best form of Buddhism? There's no best form of Buddhism. There's no worse forms of Buddhism. The different types of Buddhism aren't the same. They're just different. So do you always eat the same food every day? Do you always eat Sri Lankan food, or sometimes Western food, sometimes Indian, sometimes have Italian, sometimes have... Of course you have many different types of food. Why not have many different types of teachings? Why not? Is one better than the other? If you think it is, you have got caught up in spiritual pride. No, what works for you is the best. And sometimes a very diet is marvelous. Years ago, there was a Thai girl got married to an Italian Catholic. And after getting married, they asked, what should we do? Should my husband come to the Buddhist temple? Should I convert him? Or should I do what he wants and go to the Catholic Church? And again, my predecessor gave this beautiful advice. He said, on Saturdays, you both come to the Buddhist temple. On Sundays, you both go to church. One, to create that harmony. And also, he said, look, you're married together. You, the husband, has to learn, you know, how your wife thinks. Take her to the Buddhist temple. Learn, you know, what she thinks, her culture, her background, to really understand her and also to respect her. And you respect your husband. Go to the Catholic Church. So learn what makes him tick. Find out his religion. And that's what they did. Wonderful teachings. But I don't know what happened. Neither of them go to church anymore, but they both come to Buddhist temple. It works. But no, this is just what happened. That was the whole idea of not ever saying that one thing is better than the other. You know just how much violence and how much aggression, you know, comes when we have that sort of, I'm better than you, or my religion is better than your religion, or whatever. And of course, that is the problem. So if you really want to develop your heart, never ever think that you are sometimes better than the other person. That's also one of the reasons why, you know, people, you know, they go and buy big houses, they have fancy cars, why they wear designer clothes and designer jewelry. Why do you spend your money on such stuff for? To show I've made it. To show I've arrived. Do you want to arrive? You have arrived. You're here. So that's why I say, if you want to be one of the people who have arrived, then come into the present moment. Otherwise, you haven't arrived anywhere. You're still on the journey. You're still going somewhere. So that's why in spirituality, the present moment, being here, if you really are here, then you can truly say, I've arrived. After all this journeying, after all the hard work, after all the struggle of your life, now you are here. You've arrived. Well done. It doesn't mean you've got lots of clothes and fancy houses. That doesn't mean you've arrived. That actually means you're stupid. You're trying to impress other people. Because you're in a big house. Who does it really impress? Just your neighbors, that's all. Look at me. I live big house. Da, 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 da. Wise people, I keep saying, have small houses. They're the wise. They are the best. Because they don't have to spend so much time paying off their huge mortgages. They don't have to worry about cleaning up so many rooms every day. And also, in a small house, as I love to say, that you are living with people rather than apart from people. You're stuck together. You're learning love, how to get on with each other. You're learning family. I think one of the reasons why people just have lost those social skills in the office or even on the road is because we all live in such big houses where we have our own space, we do our own thing. We don't know how to work and live with other people. But if you grew up in a small house, a small apartment, you learn from a very early age just how to look after each other, how to live with each other, how to be in a room with three or four other people. You learn how to love and be tolerant. That's a wonderful thing with small houses. Small cars. Small cars is easier to find parking. Why do you want a big car? Big cars, there's only one person in them. What a waste of space. Small cars, small houses, small wardrobes. I had to go to the toilet today in the... I go every day, by the way. But this was in the shopping center. And I was just, it's the clearest place to go to the toilet. So I had to go in the shopping center at Karyneup Shopping Center. And you couldn't imagine just how many shops there were with girls' women's dresses. And it's just one shopping centre. Just every other shop was another sort of dress shop. I saw it was one for man's clothes shop, but about 10 girls' clothes. What's going on there? Why do you need so many dresses and clothes? You can only wear one at a time. So why do you need so much stuff? So keep it simple. Look at me. This is the only dress I've got. I don't have to worry what I'm going to wear this morning. It's always the same. It's comfortable. Whereas some of you girls, I don't know how you can wear that sort of stuff. The high heels, how do you do that? That's torture. That should be, Amnesty International should have banned those many years ago. But keep it simple, keep it comfortable, and don't try and show off and think that, look at me, you know, I wear sort of designer clothes, therefore I must be a better person. You're not a better person, you're a more stupid person for wasting lots of money on those silly things. So when you get away from spiritual pride, it's amazing just how peaceful and how much fun you can have. You don't have to say that my guru is bigger than your guru, or I go to the best path, you go to the worst path, because that is totally against, you know, what we're trying to do here. Because that pride separates you from other people. When you think you're better or you think you're worse, you know, there's a lack of family, there's a lack of compassion, there's a lack of being together. I'm just going to mention this, but it's not just spiritual pride, it's also gender pride as well. This woman, she's here, she asked me this. She said, is this really true? I'm just going to add this in here to show just how stupid religion can be sometimes. She said, is it really true? Because she was taught when she was a young girl in an Asian country that the reason she got born as a girl was she didn't have enough good karma from the past. I said, what are you talking about? Look at the poor boys. We have to go to war. We have to work so hard. So it must be bad karma being a boy. Is it? You don't say that. Which is better, girls or boys? Put your hand up. Who thinks girls are better? Only a boy put his hand up. Two boys put their hand up. Now that's very interesting. You're not better. You're not worse. You're different, that's all. And actually, when are you different? Look, if you didn't wear the clothes and you didn't have the haircuts, which is girls' haircuts and boys' haircuts, you know, as a baby, you don't know who's a girl and a boy, you know, except you look underneath, but you can't do that as a monk. So sometimes I do baby blessings and stuff, and I don't know, is a boy or a girl. In the old days, boys would be in blue, girls would be in pink. That was so easy, but you don't do that anymore, so I don't know who's a girl and a boy. So when you get old, when you get over, you know, 50 or 60, you know, everyone gets flat-breasted. We all do. So you don't know who's a girl and who's a boy at that age. And if you didn't have your sort of your makeup and your hairstyle, we look all the same. It's only just when we go through puberty, you know, for procreation and getting kids, only then we separate girls and boys, and then we all come to get back together again. It's true. So I always think that we should have unisex toilets, you know, for people under 7, 8, and unisex toilets when you go over 40. we all look the same. Interesting concept. But the spiritual pride, remember that is what separates and distinguishes you from other people. There's something which stops the sense of harmony and mutual respect. When you think you're better, or you think you're worse. When the purpose of this spiritual path is to increase a sense of peace and kindness and compassion, be able to work together, respect one another, not thinking that men are better or women are better or transgenders are best because they're in the middle sometimes, and sometimes the Buddha said the middle way is the best. No, no. What we're really wanting here is not respecting everybody for who they are, and not judging. And then maybe if you can do that to other people, you won't judge yourself so much. And you won't look at this sort of place as a place where you have to improve at all costs. You don't have to improve and attain. It's about letting go. It's about compassion, loving yourself for who you are, not trying to be something you're not, not trying to be different, not trying to be the best. Because if that's what you're trying to do, trying to be the best, you're in the wrong place. go out there in the world, go to St. George's Terrace, go to some football club and try to be the best. But here, we're trying to respect people for who they are. Isn't it wonderful? You can come to a place, you don't have to live up to any expectation, you don't have to attain, you don't have to try and become better. You're okay as you are. You have arrived. Enjoy it. Thank you for listening. Very good. Okay, so I should actually apologize for those listening on the live streaming. The last 2 weeks, you never got any sound because apparently the sound interface had broken down. But I think it's all fixed up now. So normal service has been resumed. So those people listening overseas can get the Saturday afternoon meditation as well as the talks. As we can see here, because we have three questions here from overseas, one from Sri Lanka, one from Indonesia, one from Singapore. From Sri Lanka, I am worried about a friend who watches a lot of movies that are very unwholesome. I feel that he needs to stop doing this in order to be spiritual. How can I help him? It depends what movies he watches. Because somebody once told me to watch the movie Groundhog Day. Did you ever see that? It goes round and round and round. It's just like rebirth, reincarnation. It was a wonderful movie. Except the ending there, and Groundhog Day. He got out of that by falling in love. That sucks. But the whole premise was, you know, just how boring it gets when you keep living the same life over and over and over again. Okay, reason why a person watches movies, you can watch a few movies if you want, but I think he's saying maybe obsessed with movies. I remember that when I was at university, we had a movie club, a film club at our college, and they had the program for the term, about 6 or 8 movies. And sometimes these students, you know, they were witty, but they were also incredibly smart at Cambridge. So I think the first movie was Zulu, and he called it Sex and Violence in Colonial Africa. And there was another one, I think some Western, Sex and Violence in the Wild West. And then some spy movie, Sex and Violence in Russia. And every movie was sex and violence in another place, which is actually quite true. You look at all the movies, it's just sex and violence in different countries. Batman, sex and violence in freaky costumes. That's why, you know, I've kept on asking people, why don't we have all these superheroes? What are the superheroes you have now? You have Batman, Superman, what other man's? Spider-Man. What about women? Where's the women in these superheroes? Wonder Woman. Okay, Wonder Woman. But what I want, because all these franchises, they've been done to death. So why don't we have Super Monk? And it could actually work, because Super Monk, you know, can fly through the air, you know, stop trains just by the power of his mind from falling over a cliff. I can go into the aircraft and stop the terrorists blowing up sort of the big buildings. But with Super Monk, instead of actually, you know, getting to go to the police and putting them in jail or killing them, Super Monk would just give them the 5 precepts, convert them into being peaceful people, and just let them go out of compassion. So unfortunately, there'd be no violence. And obviously no sex. That's why Super Monk has got a chance going to Hollywood. Because you need sex and violence to make a movie. We're not into that. Both of them, so we're in big trouble. So that's the end of movies. But anyway, oh, unwholesome. Yeah, because wholesome movies don't sell. So you want to stop doing this in order to be spiritual. How can I help him? Look, just now let him be who he is. Just be kind to him and don't criticize him. Don't judge him. Don't think, I am better because I don't go to movies. He is worse because he goes to movies. Please, no spiritual pride. That's where he's at. Try and get him to watch nice movies. Okay, that's the best I can say. Elaine from Indonesia, how should we deal with people, especially whom we work closely with, who profess that they are superior to us? Do we try to explain to them the Buddhist way? Do we simply nod and let it be? Now, if you can, just tell them that, you know, just because you may have a degree doesn't mean you're superior to anybody else. You know, just because you're a monk doesn't mean you're superior. I just sit up here so people can see me. You know, not because I'm superior. But, you know, since sometimes some of these monks, they sit in these huge chairs. That made them superior. No, that just gives them vertigo. It's a long way to fall. So the idea of, like, superiority, that doesn't really make any sense. In monasticism, that when it gets down to doing any work, we all have to pitch in. So it doesn't matter how superior you are, you're not superior when you're mixing concrete. You know, just because, you know, you may be a monk for many years, you also get on the end of the wheelbarrow. So there's a lovely thing about Buddhist monasticism. We don't sort of go and lift people up and say, you know, you're just such a great person. You know, you are... You know that story is, you know, I've actually got quite a lot of fame these days. And I was busy doing some concrete work with the other monks and, you know, getting all dirty. And on the way back from the building site, going to take a shower, I passed a Sri Lankan girl. I'm sorry about Sri Lankan girls. Thai girls are the same, but this happened to be a Sri Lankan girl who was dressed up in a very expensive sari. And she had so many bangles on, I thought it was an ice cream truck coming. I think you know what I mean, Sri Lankan girls. Bangle, dingle, dingle, dingle. And she came up to me and said, do you know where Ajahn Brahm is? And I was very smart. I thought quickly. I said, if you go to the dining room, you'll probably see him there in 10 minutes. So off she went, and in the meantime, I took a shower, changed my robes, cleaned up. I went to talk with her. And this is an absolutely true story. After talking to her about 15 or 20 minutes, he said, I've got to go now. That was amazing. That was wonderful. Such amazing teachings which you are giving. You're a great monk. It's a beautiful monastery. But if you don't mind me saying, there's one little comment I have to give you. That I, on the way here, I saw one of your monks and he was very improperly dressed for a monk. He was all dirty and sloppy. So, you know, that's a criticism. And I said, oh, really, madam, I will talk to that monk later. Which I did. I don't lie. I talk to myself a lot. So which was the real Ajahn Brahm? I don't know. So this is very nice. If someone thinks they're superior to you, they're actually stupid. So, you know, if that's what they think, they aren't superior at all. They're just proud. And of course, you know, sometimes they will eventually come down, just like the brain surgeon was overcome by the rocket scientist. So soon they realize they're not superior. So just when there's an opportunity, if you want to try and point out that to people, you have to choose your time and place. You have to use a time when the person is relaxed, when they're in a good mood. And then maybe you can take them aside and tell them. The problem with most of us is we choose the wrong time to point these things out to other people. They're already stressed, they've had a bad day. You point it out and that's one more thing and they just blow up. Anyway, here we go. This is from Singapore. I have been crying for 3 weeks daily since I broke up with my ex-boyfriend. I've been listening to Ajahn's talks but still can't let go. I really don't know what to do anymore. I begged him to come back, but was rejected because of an STD disease that I have. This is my first time in love, and it hurts. Now I only wish I can be a nun. No, I mean, it's obviously, hopefully it's a young girl, not someone over 50. But, and it is true that sometimes the fantasies which we have about love is sometimes that we build up all these dreams about what will happen. And sometimes those dreams get broken because they're things which can never be fulfilled. I often say that suffering in life is asking from the world something it can never give you. And especially that, you know, you think that boy was absolutely perfect, you really miss him, you beg him to come back. But look, if he really was perfect, if he really was worth your love, he wouldn't have broken up from you. He would have appreciated that, you know, just having an STD disease, that's not the reason to break up with a person. And if you really love someone, you care for them for who they are. They're not perfect. You're not perfect. We're both not perfect. That's why we can love each other. So it was a boy. Didn't deserve you. He was too stupid. But maybe he may grow up and learn a bit more later on. That's what people do in life. Sometimes the first loves which we have, you know, that we're just experimenting in life. We don't know really what we're doing. So we do get broken hearts. But as I've often said, if you haven't had your heart broken, you don't know how to love. You know, your love is just imaginary. It hasn't really been tested. And, you know, through those broken hearts, that's where you really, really learn what really love is. One thing is you lower your expectations of the opposite gender. Once you actually go out with one for a few weeks, you realize what they're really like. And then once you get real, then you can have a good relationship, which doesn't have these really high expectations of each other. In other words, you can love each other for who you are, rather than having to be supermodel and superboy. So, first time in love, it hurts. Yes, of course it does, but you grow from that. And that's a nice thing to know. Yes, 3 weeks daily since I broke up. One thing to do to stop crying is don't drink so much water. Then you got nothing to enjoy. Sorry, I'm a bit silly, but... And you've been rejected by one guy, but you won't be rejected by other guys. The right guy will eventually come along. So you can be a nun, yeah, but be a nun some later on. Have a few more relationships, first of all, until you know you realize that you're becoming a nun, not because you're running away from the world, but because you're running towards being a nun. And that's why sometimes people ask me, why did you become a monk? Did I become a monk to forget? You know, bad relationships? No, no, at least I don't think so. Maybe I have forgotten. No, just, you know, people become monks because they like being monks. They become nuns because they like being nuns, not because they're fed up with the world, not because they're running away from something, more they're running towards something. You're coming here, hopefully, not because you're running away from pain and suffering out there in the world, because this actually makes a better world for you. You're running towards something rather than running away from something. So if you want to be a nun and you're running away from a broken heart, it will never work. So eventually, just we know, we learn, we grow. Don't worry about it. You are not the worst girl in the world. You're not the best girl in the world. You're not the same as other girls in the world in Singapore. You're just uniquely different. And one day someone will recognize that and love you for who you are. STD and everything else. Okay, so any questions from the floor here for this evening about spiritual pride? Yes. Uh-oh. Haven't spoken about... What? Okay.
You haven't really spoken much about the issue of vulnerability.
Okay, yeah.
With spiritual inflation or spiritual narcissism or narcissism in the world.
Yeah.
Doesn't, aren't these coping, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't these coping mechanisms a place to hide from your own inability to handle your own not nice stuff within yourself and the lack of confidence to be able to give loving kindness towards yourself, so you pump up and, you know, you become a puffed up cane toad or a stray cat seeking attention elsewhere as a coping mechanism to get the hell away from the bad stuff that you don't feel good about within yourself. What do you think about that as a proposition?
Yeah, that's a valid proposition, and that's part of it. Why sometimes again people have that spiritual pride as a way of coping, but again that's whole point about giving that loving kindness, that acceptance towards oneself and towards other people, is, you know, then you don't judge yourself, you don't judge other people. The loving kindness, opening the door of your heart to accept yourself as you are, is the unconditional part of loving kindness. And that's how we regard other people, unconditional love, no matter who they are, which is a love which doesn't judge, which doesn't put a person up on a pedestal, doesn't actually put them down in the pits and the sewers, and doesn't have this conceit of our Western world, everyone is born equal. And they're not born equal, they're not the same. You know, we're just totally different, everybody. And that's one of the problems, again, with psychology and medicine. putting everybody in the same box as being ADD or everyone in the same box, you know, you have cancer. Putting people in the same box when every doctor knows for 1,000 people who've got cancer, every cancer is totally unique, totally different. We only try and sort of put them in the one label just for the efficiency of trying to have a treatment. But, you know, you're a therapist. You know that you have many, many people come, say, with depression, and no two are ever the same. Absolutely different, unique. Which is better, which is worse?
Bunty.
Sorry, yeah, go on.
You were talking about that woman in Singapore who was having basically someone who's bullying her, someone who thinks that they're superior to her.
Indonesia, yeah.
Yeah, wherever it was, yeah. I'm wondering whether, with situations where people are bullying you, whether an overt expression of loving kindness towards yourself, in other words, you'd clearly demonstrate that you value yourself and take yourself seriously.
Yeah.
Is that an effective counter message to someone who, because someone who bullies you is using contempt. In other words, you are crap and I am top dog, okay? Is that an effective, is there a place for overt expression of gentleness and kindness towards oneself in the face of being bullied? Does that work?
Indeed, there is an overemphasis on this, not so much loving kindness, but the passiveness. That's why the known Open the Door of Your Heart book I mentioned about the snake. It's okay to hiss out of loving kindness, but not to bite as a snake. In other words, to protect yourself. So don't ever think that as a Buddhist you have to be so passive and be a doormat or think this is my karma to have a boss like this. That is not Buddhism at all. If you can do something to protect yourself and protect others, then fine. Again, one of the problems, as I mentioned on a talk on bullying some last year, I think, is that whenever we have hierarchies, then we get bullying. It's just part of a hierarchy that when you have someone who's a senior, someone a junior, then some of those people will take that as the legitimate reason to bully the people underneath you, which is one of the reasons why flat management structures in business are far more effective and overcome bullying. Why if we have schools where we don't have too many year differences in the same schools, we don't have years 1 to 7, small kids and big kids in the same playground. The hierarchies of size and power are just not there. And if we can have such flat structures, we'll do a lot to avoid bullying. Because we're always bullying those people who are inferior to us. And that's one of the reasons why that pride, trying to link that to the talk this evening, spiritual pride. I am the great abbot, the enlightened master, of course. And you are just the small, insignificant little worm in front of me. And of course, that gives rise to bullying, spiritual bullying. And of course, that's nothing to do, with spirituality at all. We take away those hierarchies. One of the things I never said, which comes up now, when the Buddha passed away, just before he passed away, one of the great things about this teaching, they asked him, who's going to take over? Who's going to be the boss once you've passed away? And the Buddha replied, no person will be the boss of Buddhism. Let the teachings and the training be your leader from here on. Which means there was never any sort of pope or ayatollah or any other sort of leader in Buddhism. The Dalai Lama is not the leader of Buddhism. No one can be. The teachings, the training, that's always going to be the leader. So straight away, the Buddha took away all hierarchies. We've been trying to have them since, but they can't really have much traction because there's no ground for them. There is no head monk of Australia. There's no head nun. There never will be. Isn't that wonderful? So that takes away a lot of the spiritual bullying which can sometimes happen. I don't know if that answered your question, but thank you for saying thank you. Okay, any other question from the floor before we finish off? Going, gone. So thanks again for listening. and hopefully it was useful for you. And thank you again for coming. And don't ever think that you are better or worse or the same as other people, and then you can be free. Just pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.
But last.